Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'll be moderating today's webinar on the importance of teaching soft skills to collectors. Collectors are usually very well trained in the laws and regulations that govern debt collection. They are trained to make sure they know what they can say and what they can't say. But one area that maybe doesn't receive a lot of attention is training collectors in how to say what they need to say. These soft skills are an essential component of being an effective and empathetic debt collector. And I've gathered a panel of experts today who will share their tips and ideas about how to teach this important skill set to your collection agents. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Arbyte Software. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me now tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Kelly Kruger is the Vice President of Organizational Development and Training for CVE Companies. Kelly has 22 years of experience in training and development and currently oversees all matters relating to employee development and engagement. Kelly's been with CVE on and off since 1996 and specializes in sales, persuasion, customer service, recovery, and management training. The training focuses on the development of human talent, utilizing the latest innovations in human performance technology. Courtney Reno is president of Creditors Bureau USA. She's a third-generation debt collector, and over the past 18 years, her career has allowed her to wear many different hats within the collection industry. Her professional experience is rooted in the healthcare industry with a special understanding of law and consumer rights. Courtney is currently also serving as president of the California Association of Collectors. Greg Ruffino is the director of training at Williams & Fudge. Greg has worked at Williams & Fudge for the past 8 years, starting as a collector and working his way up the ladder to director of training. Greg recently spoke at ACA International's conference on the topic of training. He's a certified training specialist with ACA International. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, before we get started, this event is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. So with that, let's jump into today's discussion. And the first question might be, as one of our panelists said prior to starting the webinar, probably the most complicated to answer, and that is, how would you define soft skills, at least as it pertains to being a collector? And I know, Kelly, you're very excited to answer this one.
I am. So I was the one that said, this is such a tough question, because how do you really define it? So when I kind of looked up the definition of soft skills, and it's basically personal attributes that enable someone to interact effectively and harmoniously with other people. So in really unpacking this question, I think honestly, everything a collector does is beyond the compliance stuff that they have to do and the system stuff, you know, how to point and click and copy and paste and document accounts, and even some of that is all soft skills. So how do I define soft skills? It's the job of a collector minus the technical side. Everything they do is dealing with people and negotiating and convincing people to trust them. All of that takes soft skills. But I would love to hear what the other panelists say in regards to this.
That's a good start, Kelly. Hi, this is Greg. That's exactly what it is. It's the actual talking to people. I refer to it as, are you able to be a conversationalist, whether you are all the time or when you put the job hat on? Either way is when that job hat's on, you need to be a conversationalist. Can you actively listen to what someone is saying to you? So you're doing more listening than talking most of the time. How are you responding? What words are you using when you do respond? All those things come into play with what kind of the world of soft skills. Can you effectively communicate as a conversationalist? Can you understand what someone is saying? Can you show empathy? Can you explain what you need to be understood? All those things come down to outside of putting numbers on a computer screen, typing in notes, knowing compliance rules, knowing your clients' policies, things of that nature. How do I talk to you? What words do I use? And am I effectively being a conversationalist? Soft skills.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the ability to communicate effectively, as well as the ability to listen, retain, and respond effectively, is one of the most important things about being a collector, as well as having a positive mental attitude. That's something that's difficult, and it's not always something that you find when you hire a collector. You do have to train them to have that positive mental attitude, because that does go across the phone.
So really what you're saying is it's kind of a minor, soft skills are sort of a minor, have a minor impact on how a collector does when it comes to their his or her job.
I feel like that was a setup question, Mike.
No.
Yeah. No, it's a major part, because as we all know, you might only get one opportunity to speak to someone. You might only have a couple of seconds to get their attention or to build that trust. And it all comes down to what you say. Most of our shops, we're not really looking at who we're speaking to, we know little to nothing about them. So it really is a major component. It's way more important than the pushing of the buttons on the keyboard or the running of a software program to do the job. It all comes down to how you talk, what you say, what you don't say, when you say it, the tone that comes out. It's the most important skill set.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the sound bite I was looking for.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think effective communication and listening skills are really important for any employee, not just collectors, because that's essentially how employees will interact with each other and their managers. And it's also how well or their ability that for that employee to learn new skills. So without effective communication and listening skills, you're probably not going to end up with a long-term employee, or that collector may decide this isn't the right job for them, because effective communication is super important and the soft skills that go along with it.
That's a really good point, because I came into the webinar just myself thinking we're all going to be talking about collectors specifically. But you just threw a little curve there, and it makes great sense where from the training and the management side, if you're the president or whoever you are at your agency, you can't expect these things if you're not practicing them from your employees. So when you're training someone, if they come into your office and say, hey, you won't believe what this person just said on this last call, and you give them a snide remark, or you don't give them the proper time, or you don't respond to them correctly, then you're not exactly showing soft skills yourself then. So as trainers and leaders and managers, we need to be at the forefront when we don't just expect it, but when we speak to our employees that we should be, and I'm sure as the webinar goes on, we'll discuss some of the words and some of the tactics that what is soft skills, but we need to be practicing it the way we respond to our staff as well. That's a really good point.
Excellent. Well, we're off to a great start. What I'd like to do now for a quick second, I would pause the discussion and say a few words about our sponsor of today's webinar, Arbyte Software. Arbyte Software is a team of nerds constantly innovating contact software for agencies of any size. Arbyte's founders previously owned a collection agency, so they know firsthand how important soft skills coupled with the right software are to the collection process. Arbyte believes in a you'll get more bees with honey approach, meaning the more pleasant and seamless your conversations are with consumers, the more talk time and amount collected you'll see. Arbyte software will allow for crystal clear and uninterrupted conversations. In addition to a broadcast dialer, Arbyte also created the only TCPA compliant manual dialing solution that removes the 3-second pause from calls and adds 3 levels of human intervention to every dial. It pairs perfectly with Arbyte's highly customizable VoIP office phone system that operates on their own tier 1 carriers. Arbyte offers free trials of all their software. Visit ourphoneswork.com to schedule a free demo. And personally, I just want to thank Arbyte for sponsoring this and all the other webinars they've been sponsoring with accountsrecovery.net in the past month. I really appreciate their gracious support of an endeavor that seeks to educate and inform the ARM industry. Really appreciate that. Thank you, Arbyte, for sponsoring today's webinar. With that, let's jump back into the discussion. So we sort of defined the scope of what soft skills are and talked about how important they are. So let's start to dive in and look at how to identify soft skills, how to train soft skills, and things like that. So the first question I'd like to ask, and maybe Courtney, you can take it first, is how do you identify or assess an individual's soft skills during the hiring process?
So I'd say the first step is a phone interview or a phone pre-screening. I really do like to take the time to speak to the person on the phone, specifically if I'm hiring a collector or a receptionist or even a salesperson. If a lot of their, most of their job is going to be spending time on the phone. So I think getting, seeing that prospective employee's interaction and responsiveness when they're unable to have a face-to-face communication is really important. But secondly, I'd say a personality profile to determine how your prospective employee matches up with your benchmark agent or staff member. A good personality profile will provide a measure of the employee's soft skills in comparison with your target employee or maybe your benchmark collector. And I think finally, the in-person interview is really where you will be able to see how the employee listens, communicates, and interacts. Also, are they able to feed off of your body language? Are they looking you in the eyes? How are they responding to those in-person communications that you're having during that interview? And also, that in-person interview allows you to ask questions and elicit responses about specific soft skills that you may want to see if they have or to promote or encourage in the workspace.
I have a question for you on that, Courtney. When you're doing the in-person interview, and I'm just kind of matching up what I would think the answer is, what kind of percentage do you think the candidate should be speaking during that discussion?
When we're having an in-person interview, I like to ask questions that are going to elicit difficult responses. So questions that are maybe outside of what you would normally hear in an interview, to really see how they assess themselves in these sections. So I would say that the majority of the speaking would be the prospective employee, whereas I would be doing a little speaking about the job, the hours, certain requirements of the job.
I wasn't expecting anything else, so I would totally agree. We'll use a soft number, which you can never actually measure, but usually in our minds we're thinking about 75% of the time the candidate should be doing the talking. So I totally agree with you there.
So some of the things that we do during the interview that maybe might be out of the box, but also kind of helps us understand their ability to be flexible and friendly and have confidence in themselves is, I mean, obviously we ask, you know, the questions, tell me about yourself, because that if they can open up the dialogue confidently in regards to that, then it's a good start. But we ask them to sell us something. Pick anything in the room. You've got, and we say, you've got 2 minutes. We're going to walk out of the room. You've got 2 minutes to prepare. And we come back in and say, all right, pick what you're going to sell and sell it to us. I mean, it is scary to them, so it shows their ability to really, you know, work on their feet and shoot from the hip and be creative and deal with maybe something they weren't prepared for. It really figures out their creativity, their listening skills, kind of in there too, because you know sometimes when you ask a question, they're looking for a question. When we say, all right, sell us something. And then right after that, I'm sure both of their ears shut down and they just get so scared. So, and it just really shows their ability to communicate and confidence. But confidence is one of the biggest skills we look for when we're trying to recruit recruit a collector. So this really shows us a lot.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's a great idea.
You always have standard questions in your back pocket. I mean, any interview can take lots of different turns and you can follow those little turns to see where they take you. But having a couple standard questions to match up against everyone's responses, and there's countless different ones, but you could ask them to explain how in a past job they overcame a communication breakdown, or you might have a certain statement or a question that might come off as argumentative or controversial, and
maybe you don't mean it or it's irrelevant, but you're just looking to see how they respond to a certain statement or question that you might ask. But having very open-ended questions that make them explain how they might have used soft skills in the past and they don't even know that they're explaining it. That I find that to be very effective as well. But the make them sell something is brilliant. You're always going to get not necessarily the best techniques, but you're looking for confidence there, as you mentioned, is a key component to what we're doing, having that confidence to be able to just put yourself out there and go for it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea what you said, Kelly, about selling yourself. Courtney, I wanted to circle back. You said you like to sort of ask difficult questions. I was wondering if maybe you could give an example of what type of question that might be.
So we'll ask a question like, briefly describe both the best and the worst supervisor to whom you reported in the past and why. I do think those are really interesting questions because sometimes they're incredibly comfortable and they're willing to talk about in depth how horrible a past supervisor was. And maybe they were, but that's not really what you're looking for in a job interview. They shouldn't be probably bad-mouthing their prior employer and then taking a very limited amount of time to talk about the best supervisor. Or another question is to tell us how your previous employer would have rated your attendance. So, you know, attendance is super important, especially for a collection representative or really for any job in an office, but asking them how their previous supervisor or how they would rate their attendance is really funny because sometimes they don't rate their attendance all that good. So instead of saying, what would your past supervisor say about your attendance, it changing it up and saying, how would you rate your attendance gives them, they tend to answer it a little differently.
That's a good question. To throw into that mix as well, you could throw in, explain to me or outline to me the last time you experienced bad customer service and talk me through how that came to be, just so they're kind of on the other side of the spectrum, talking like they might be the consumer, how it was that they were treated, what was said to them, what was not done to them, how they responded, what their perception was about that, just to kind of paint the picture of the other side of the aisle.
Yeah,
one of the tough questions that we ask that often surprise people is, what are your pet peeves? And it really helps us understand. I mean, we're hiring for competency, chemistry, and those two things really show us if they can really do it. So character, competency, and chemistry. And when we ask, what are your pet peeves? It does let us know if they're going to have a good chemistry with the team and with the consumers that they're going to deal with every day. Because if their pet peeves are people who just, you know, it's really a truly negative pet peeve that they're going to deal with every day, it's probably not going to be a good fit. And then we ask that, and then of course you ask how do you work through that every day when you have a situation, and then we ask a specific situation based on what their pet peeve was.
Interesting.
Great.
So if they say their pet peeve is talking on the phone, that might be a problem later on, you know, if they were to get hired.
Mm-hmm. But like, one of the things that they'll say is, like, my pet peeve is people who talk really, really slow. It just drives me nuts. We had an applicant say that. And then, so then the question would be like, okay, so talk to me about a situation where you had someone who you were talking to on the phone who maybe talked a little bit slower than you would have liked. How did you deal with that? And what was the result? You know, those star interviews.
I'm curious because with a lot of these questions, they're unless you really sort of delve in, it's impossible to know whether the person you're talking to is telling the truth or not. So, I mean, you're not necessarily looking for something that's sort of objective. It's more of a subjective thing. It's more of a communication skill, the ability to sort of tell a story, you know, the ability to convey information in a positive and easy to listen manner. Is that more what you're looking for than necessarily someone, you know, being, you know, 100% truthfully honest with you?
Well, I think you have to word the questions in such a way that it gives them the best opportunity to be honest. So I do find that a lot of times, unless you ask how their previous supervisor would rate this or rate that, you probably are going to get a very honest response. And that's why it's really important to ask those tough questions, but ask them in a way that puts the customer, or, you know, the employee, the prospective employee at ease. So, I mean, like when you're doing if you do a personality profile before your in-person meeting, a lot of those come up with questions based on their strengths and weaknesses. So you might end up with a question like that speaks to a weakness that they may have that was detected in the personality profile, that's saying, talk about a time where you would ask the employee, talk about a time where you felt you were unfairly criticized and how did you respond? And listening to their answers, if they come up with something like, well, I've never been unfairly criticized, then you probably know that they're not really being honest. Or if you ask them the same question about, tell me about the best supervisor to whom you've reported in the past, or the worst supervisor, and they respond that I've never had a best, that's probably not the person you want to hire. Because if they can't find one positive thing about a prior supervisor, that's probably not the type of person that you want to introduce into your office.
I would definitely agree with that. Definitely a red flag.
My greatest weakness is working too hard. No.
Yeah.
All right. So we've kind of talked a little bit about the hiring process. You found somebody that, you know, the skills they demonstrated during the hiring interview process warranted an offer. They accepted. They've come on board now. What's the process within your office? And maybe Greg, you can go first. Is what's the process in your office for sort of training or working to sort of develop those soft skills once they get on into the office?
Sure. So I think the first most important thing is, if I was to walk out on the floor right now or bring people in and just kind of do a soft survey, like, hey, what are soft skills? Just real simple like that. I'd probably get a lot of different answers or confused looks, but they don't necessarily know what I'm talking about. So before I'm even going to introduce a topic or train a topic that's beyond the normal, like, hey guys, we're going to talk about overcoming the stall today, or we're going to talk about negotiating payment arrangements. It's pretty obvious what you're talking about. If I say, hey, we're going to train on soft skills today, on the surface, people might not have any idea what you're talking about. So I think it's very important from the beginning you explain, this is exactly what this means and why it's important to us and why we have to take note of it. So beyond anything else, make sure your staff knows exactly why it is that we are even interested in this topic and the use of these words and how it's so important to us. But one of the things that we have done that I've been pushed in the last couple of years is, while I was collecting here, we would, as a collector, I would never know when the company faced a lawsuit or a complaint or what the end result of that would be or how those things would even come into fruition. On some, you know, company meetings, you might get certain references of, we've improved here or we've had some issues there, but we didn't really know why. We didn't know, well, how did we get sued on something or what was the end result of that? So one of the things I've done is start to play calls where we've been verified that we were sued on this call for harassment. And we all know that's pretty much undefined, but okay, we got a harassment call. Let's hear that call. Let me play that call for you so we can break down exactly where this turned sour. Or we got a complaint from this consumer and they went to the CFPB complaint portal, or they went to our client. And it could just be the collector used bad words, they were argumentative, they had bad tone, they overspoke the consumer, whatever the case is, we need to play that call for our staff and play lots of those calls for the staff so they're hearing the common problems that arise from these certain situations that actually came to fruition, where someone actually pushed a lawsuit or pushed a complaint. And then on the flip side of that, we're also going to play lots of calls that might have led to compliments. We do have ways to capture consumer compliments. Maybe they went back to our client and made a reference, or maybe they went to our website, whatever the case is. But we're going to play those calls too and play them side by side to really highlight where the difference is in the subtlety, sometimes the tone, the use of words, allowing somebody else to speak. But this is one of those topics where you've got to hear real examples, in my opinion. I can talk to you and show you PowerPoint slides all day that says, use the words, we, us, let's, help, thank you, please. All those are great inclusive words that are soft skills. I can tell you to use those words more, but you need to hear real live examples. So beyond me listening to your calls, beyond me auditing your calls, I'm going to play for you verified calls where a consumer took us to the next level for a good reason or for a bad reason. And we need to start emulating that language and how that individual is doing those things. And then in addition to that, those individuals who you know who are excelling at using great words, great soft words, things of that nature, I'm going to have you shadow that person and listen to them as they work. So you can see how they work. You can see how they're sitting straight up in their desk. You can see how there's a smile on their face. You can see how they have that positive mental attitude, and it comes out in the things that they say. That's just one thing that we might do here to help introduce and teach that topic.
At CBE, we train them on their first day of employment. They go through orientation paperwork stuff. So on the second day of their job, second and third day of their job, we go through 16 hours of 7 habits of highly effective people training. We believe that if you're a better person at home, then you'll be a better person at work. So happy at home, happy at work, you know, happy employees equal happy consumers. So we go through an intensive 2-day long training on that. And then we talk about it throughout training, or when we do kind of like what Greg was talking about, is the call calibrations and letting them listen to their calls and letting them listen to other people's calls, or when they're not coming to work every day, like we remind them, remember, if you want to begin with the end in mind, what is your end in mind in this job? Either to make more money, collect commission, or become a member of leadership, what you're doing today on the phones isn't getting you there. So remember that. So it allows us to have a lot of those crucial conversations tied to common language. And then we actually go through every day. There's a soft skills training in new hire training, which I'm sure is no different than every other shop in the country they go through. Because it's the number one skill of collectors. You got to teach them how to negotiate. You got to teach them how to talk. You got to teach them to listen. So obviously that's probably part of everybody's new hire training.
Yeah, so we do very similar. I'm also a trainer specialist with ACA, so I do in-house the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act training, as well as state laws, state rules and regulations. And then what I find really important is, of course, the essential collection skills and techniques. And then we morph that with real-world experiences or real calls in the office that the new employees would listen to. But one of the most effective things that I have found at the end of training, before we get them on the phones, and we do this pretty regularly, even when they are on the phones, just to reinforce it, is role playing. We'll have my new hires that I've hired, if I've hired a group of them, we have them come up with different stalls or objections that they think a consumer might give them for reason for non-payment. And then we'll put those on flashcards. And so we might end up with, you know, 15 or 20 after we really sit around and think about different stalls or objections that they might hear. And then we group everybody into groups of 3. One person plays the debt collector, the second person plays the consumer, and the third person is the moderator. So the consumer draws a card with the stall or objection. So they don't know what it is, and they don't share that with the debt collector. And then the debt collector goes through the call model and attempts to collect the debt. And then at that point, the consumer gives them their stall or objection, whatever that may be. And the debt collector's goal is to, of course, try to get past that stall or objection. When there's a pause, or the collector can't come up with something to say, or maybe the consumer has no response, then the moderator stops the role play, and then everybody kind of talks about it from there. And that tends to get them way more comfortable when they do have to get on the phone. They're not as overwhelmed and not as fearful of whatever stall or objection that they might hear. We also do some training that I learned through one of my colleagues at CAC, Kelly Parsons O'Brien, and that's teaching the collectors to communicate how they can help a consumer instead of saying what they can't do. So that's one of the most annoying things when I walk out onto the floor is hearing, you know, excuse me, sir, you know, or something like that is just, it's just nails on a chalkboard for me. so we'll teach them, instead of saying, I'm sorry, sir, I can't remove this account from your credit report, the collector could not even respond to that and say, I understand that you want to have this removed from your credit. Here's what I can do to help you get this cleared up. So instead of saying what they can't do, saying what they can do. And that tends to give a better customer experience.
You just nailed it right there with showing what that statement was and what it should have been. That's soft skills in a nutshell, or neuro-linguistic programming kind of thing. Like, I'm going to acknowledge what you said, but I'm going to tell you something in a more positive light and make sure we're on the same page instead of saying no. That's perfect. Those are the sentences that your staff needs to hear. So I love that you had the role-playing with the moderator. One of the things we'll do in addition is we will get small groups, whether it's 3, 4, or 5 people, typically on the same kind of training timeline or new hire class or whatever. And we'll play calls where we'll find calls where they didn't get paid, but they had a lengthy conversation, or the call ended up being marked as a dispute. And we'll kind of listen to those calls, and I'd moderate it, but I would let the other collectors in the room critique their coworkers. And obviously it's done in a very positive, upbeat way, but hearing your associates do that exact same thing that you just outlined, where, hey, instead of saying, no, I can't do that, maybe there, I've gotten better results when I say, so I get that you need to get this removed. Here's what we can do to make that happen. Stuff like that. So when you hear it from not just the trainer, and when you hear it from the person you might do a shadowing session or mentor session with, that's all good and great. But when you are hearing it and getting that confirmation from the person right next to you in a training session like that, that's very impactful, that you know that this person's on the same page and the same level as me. They're doing this, and that's something I should take into consideration.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You should make sure you're moderating those so you keep their comments in check, right?
I'm curious how often you're changing your either continuing education or your new hire training, as you come across new ideas, as you come across maybe new studies or new ways to approach it. How often are you tweaking, what you're training or what you're working with or what you're sort of imparting to your employees as it pertains in this area of sort of soft skills and communication?
Well, I'm getting ready to have a class January 7th, and I'm going to start to add that 3-person role play. I've been meaning to get us back into doing that, and hearing some of these ideas today is exactly why I participate in this, not just to speak, but to learn. I like the sound of that. I need to bring that back into our folder. We come up with a very similar model with 2 people with the moderator, and we'll change a couple times a year. It's not something you ideally can do every single month or every single higher class, but you need to be wide open to trying new things. What worked last time? Do I need to change things last time? I think the overarching theme of soft skills doesn't really change. Nothing drastic is changing with the concept of it. You just kind of need to understand that your collectors, no matter what their tenure is, brand new or they've been here a long time, we need to keep that topic in front of them, because it's something that once you teach them a computer skill set, the copy paste, the note entering, all that good software running, it's almost autopilot. You don't really need to go back and revisit those things very often, if ever. Once you know how to use our collection software, you're pretty much good to go. But the soft skills is something that you can very easily get away from. I forgot who mentioned it, but earlier you referenced things are going well outside in life, and typically they can be going well for you on the inside. So things change for people all year round, and it's hard for us to know sometimes when someone's had a downshift on the outside of life. So either way, we need to keep the topic at the forefront. So a couple of times a year, at least, your tenured staff should be seeing these topics come up in year-round training. But you need to change whenever you see something ineffective is happening, or whenever you hear a great idea. I shouldn't be telling myself, oh, I'll do the the role-playing thing in, when we have a class in May, I'll start doing it then. No, I got about 3 weeks, and then I can make that happen. No problem. That's a great idea. There's no reason why in January I don't start to add that into my new hire training.
I think
I agree.
I agree too. I think it always needs to be in the forefront. The one thing I think we always need to keep in mind is that new generations are constantly coming into the workforce, and what, like, the maybe the boomers
did really good at, the millennials are not maybe doing so good at. And I think technology is making it even more important than ever to teach soft skills, because they don't have the social skills that maybe the generations before them had, because of the texting and social media is making it easy for them to not have to be social face to face or verbally. They can just do it with their thumbs, right? And so, like, we need to teach them more of the emotional intelligence and the ability to communicate effectively with your voice versus written.
Yeah, and I totally agree. We're always updating what we perform training on, and it's things like this, going to events like this, going to training classes where I hear new ideas of how to perform training. And so we roll it out and we try it and see if it works in our shop. And then the other thing that we do is, as I'm listening to call recordings and maybe I've received a complaint, or there was a low QA score, we might notice certain words that aren't working. And so we'll do training with the collectors, for example, on, instead of saying what you can't do, telling somebody what you can do and how you can help them. And also to use certain words or to not use certain words and find replacements. So one of the things that I really can't stand when I hear it on the floor is when I hear a collector say, "Sir, you need to," and because nothing coming out of their mouth after "you need to" is going to be positive, ever. Mm-hmm. So those are one of the words that don't work in my office. And so when that is something that I expect to never hear out of anybody's mouth when they're communicating with a consumer, because it's just not going to end up positive. That consumer is either going to want to speak to a supervisor, they're going to hang up the phone and not resolve the account, or they may file a complaint with our client or the Better Business Bureau or the CFPB. And those are all things that we don't want to happen. So doing training like that to remove those words and to replace them with different things. One of the things that I find, especially my millennials, have difficulty with is saying they're sorry. Not that they're personally sorry. Maybe they didn't do anything wrong, but just to be able to listen to what a consumer is saying and apologize for what they're going through. And I think that's huge in de-escalating calls. And people can say that they're sorry or that they apologize for whatever the consumer may be experiencing, whether or not it's our fault or the consumer's fault or whoever's fault it may be. I think apologizing goes a really long way.
And I think those individuals that might not have the forefront to think that this might be a good thing for me to say, or a good time for me to say, "I'm really sorry to hear that." There are certain people that's who they are by nature, that they're going to empathize. They came into your office already with the soft skills, with the communication skills, and they'll do that. The ones that don't, if it's not in their nature, they need to understand why that's important. So even if you can get that person who outside the office would never talk or think like that in their normal everyday conversations, that's one thing. That's something, a battle that we might not win. But if I can get you to understand why, when you're on the phone, that it's important to do those things, and if you can fake it till you make it, so to speak, and the consumer doesn't know any different, then so be it. But for them to understand, this is so important that right here in this call, if you just gave half a second, I'm very sorry to hear that, that goes a million miles as opposed to you just ignoring what they just said and moving right on. So at least if they can understand how it affects them, how that might affect their paycheck, that person might be able to get the concept. And as I just said, kind of fake it till they make it. I'll work on changing your brain a little bit and your personality and how you communicate. But at the end of the day, if I can at least get you to start there and recognizing how important it is, even if you're not sorry or if you're just cold to the bone and you're not an empathetic person, when you're on the phone, you need to be, or at the very least, you better be faking it. One of the two, you decide. And you gotta be careful when you fake it, because you know people aren't dumb; they can hear it. You know, and so sure. I say that with a little bit of caution. But at the end of the day, if you're gonna be the one talking to our consumers, and I'm gonna let you do that, be good at faking it if you don't believe it.
Well, I mean, it's the idea of having a smile. It's the idea of having a smile on your voice. If you have a smile on your face, even if you're having a bad day, that smile is going to pass through in the phone. It's going to pass through to other people. That smile is infectious. So if you can have somebody that's coming in that maybe had a bad day or a bad call, but still is able to have that smile on their face, even if they don't feel like smiling, that eventually is going to result in them feeling happy. And it's going to pass through those calls. So I think, it's really, really super important to have that positive mental attitude and to be able to recognize that, everything doesn't always go perfectly, but in a sense, if you can fake that smile, eventually you may be happy, or that consumer will feel that you're happy and you'll have a more positive result.
Yeah, the smiling and the power poses. I'm doing a class tomorrow with our staff here, and really all that class is going to be is me playing a series of two or three different TED Talks off of YouTube. Really all it is. I'll do very little talking. I'll play a couple short videos where, yes, particularly one of them, this woman is talking about power poses or how you communicate or smiling and the science behind how there's literal chemical changes within your body that are trackable and provable that show, when I talk to you with my back straight and my arms open, there are different things occurring inside my mind that are going to help me be a better communicator and help me have a better mental attitude, as opposed to if I'm slouched over, my arms are crossed and I'm frowning, without me even knowing it, there's different things occurring inside my body that are eventually going to come out in my mouth. So just kind of opening up the eyes and the science behind what we're saying. If I'm telling you, hey, you need to sit up at your desk, you need to put a smile on your face, people are saying that's cheesy or corny, it doesn't make any sense. Well, there's a real science and there's a reason behind it. So it kind of goes to playing lawsuit calls or complaint calls, where it's not just me telling you that. Here is a scientist or a doctor who's telling you they did the research on it that proves to you what we're saying is actually true. So maybe you should try sitting up. Maybe you should try standing at your desk when you're in that difficult conversation. You should try putting that smile on your face, and it's something that will eventually come out where you're going to notice the difference in how you're thinking and how you're speaking.
Great idea.
And it's curious, next for easy class for me, too. Sorry about that, Mike.
That's all right. No worries. Just wanted to remind everybody, we've got about 15 minutes left. If you have a question, now would be the time to open up your question panel on your Zoom webinar control panel and type it in and get it to the panel before the webinar is over. I wanted to ask the panel, I'm curious whether or not you think that these soft skills that we're talking about, whether or not that's something that can be taught, or whether it's something you sort of, you either have it or you don't.
I have to believe that anything can be taught, but I also have to believe the reality is if I'm getting an adult who on paper might be a great candidate or might have a great internal reference, and obviously I'm talking to an adult, but the older the dog, the harder the tricks are to be taught, right? But I believe anyone could be taught new tricks, but a lot of these soft skills are going to be things that have been could be ingrained in someone for an entire lifetime of certain exposures and environments. And this person might be 35, 40 plus years old, and I'm thinking that I'm going to be able to change them. Well, in my position, I have to think that I can. Whether that actually happens is another story. It's, it's a two-way street if someone allows the change to occur, but you have to believe that it is capable, but you also have to know where your time and energy might get maxed out. But everyone is able to be taught anything that their mind is open to. So again, I believe you fully explain to someone, we're going to work on this topic. Here's what this topic literally means. Here's what soft skills means. This is why it's so important. This is how the paycheck, you got to find a way for them to get excited or get on the same page as to why I am teaching this. I'm going to teach you how to use our collection software machinery, because if you don't know how to do that, you can't talk to people, you can't make money. Oh, okay, I better learn how to use this piece of software, otherwise I can't make money. Hey, I'm going to talk to you about soft skills and how important it is to talk to people using the right words and the right tone. And if you can't do that, it's going to be very difficult for you to make money. Oh, geez, I better be able to do that. So I'm making sure this person knows here's why we're training and what it is and what it is going to affect your bottom dollar. And at the end of the day, that person needs to get on board with it. But anyone is capable of changing, and you have a better probability of changing that person if they're bought into the why and the how.
I mean, I think it depends, because if you're hiring, let's say, an IT person, maybe, you know, the soft skills needed aren't as important or don't need to be as ingrained in different training methods and ideas as a collector. Or maybe you have a posting person and all they're doing is posting payments all day. And, you know, yes, they need to have some soft skills in order to communicate within the office, but if they're not a consumer facing employee, it may or may not be, you know, make or break. I do think when you're dealing with hiring a collector or a salesperson or a receptionist, that is something that they really do have to come into it with some degree of soft skills. I think from there, you can train them on your expectations or how to enhance those soft skills. But I would say if you have a non-vocal person that's coming in for an interview that's never communicated verbally, you're going to have a difficult time teaching that person soft skills.
I got a quick example on that. So this is a recent one. Old school collector, been with this company probably 10 plus years, in the industry forever. Older gentleman, rough around the edges, very rough, old school debt collection mentality. He's a constant work in progress. So not long ago, he gets sent my way, had a complaint call, and he was no stranger to these. And it's my time to deal with him. It's my turn. And I'm listening to the call with him that generated the complaint. And for anyone with half a brain, it's abundantly obvious that this is a very difficult call to listen to. A lot of cringe going on. He's talking to a female, very rude, talking down to her, nasty, argumentative, all that good stuff. And I'm trying to get him to identify where the problems are here, and he's not making the connection. And I don't necessarily want to claim that my next statements changed this man's world, but as of a couple months, he's definitely been on a better track. And essentially, I was just brutally honest with him. I said to the man, I said, if that was my wife, my mother, my sister, I would never let them talk to you ever again. If I was ever in a position to do business with you, no matter what, you would never get a dime of my money. And he looked mortified and shocked. And I think, to the best of my knowledge, I was probably the first person to get that brutally honest with him. And when I referenced, I would never let this person talk to you again, I would never give you a dime of my money, it really, at least in my belief, sank home with him that kind of let him understand that the way he's operating, he's an old school dinosaur and he has an opportunity to change and finish out his career, or his time was going to be very, very thin, that we just weren't going to tolerate that old school debt collection mentality. And being that brutally honest with him, at least in the last couple of months, has proven to open his eyes up. I'd still say the jury's out on this gentleman, but training sessions and comments like that, when you're absolutely that honest, you're talking about the bottom dollar, their paycheck, the actual brute reality of you better change or you're going to be a dying breed that no longer has a place in this business, that might open up someone's eyes. In that single instance, I'm hoping and I'm believing that that page was turned for that guy, and he'll be able to work the next couple of years before his retirement. And we'll see how that goes. But I think that made a major impact on him. I would never give you a dime of my money if you talk to me like that. Ever.
I think things are, I agree. I think sometimes you have to be brutally honest with those seasoned collectors who maybe didn't have to use the soft skills, but I think they also came to the table with some at least communication skills, or we probably wouldn't have given them the job. And that's kind of where I'm agreeing with all of you. And I think everybody has said it. If you don't know how to be a good communicator and a good listener and a good negotiator, you don't have really great soft skills, and you're probably not going to make it in the job. So I'm probably not going to hire you, but I'm going to be honest in regards to that. You wouldn't hire me for accounting. I'm terrible with numbers. So I'm just setting, if I got a job in accounting, I'd just be set up for failure. So when we're interviewing, we say, you know, these are some of the biggest skills that you need in order to be successful in this job. If these, based on what we've talked about, it doesn't seem like some of these skills are easy or even part of who you are, I think I'd just be setting you up for failure, because the job is, no matter what, a performance job. And the only way you can perform in this job is through soft skills. So
I love that on the front end of the hiring, because that's something that we've done in the last year, is allow candidates to hear a difficult call. We won't play lots for them, but we have one specific call that is just easy to replay, but we'll play it for a candidate and says, this could be a call that you could get on any given day. And we'll pause it several times and kind of say like, so, you know, what do you think about it here? What do you think should be done there? But it's to kind of break away from any kind of shock factor when they come in on the first day and they start to get exposed to these things and say, I had no idea it was going to be like this. Mm-hmm. So letting them hear, whether they have experience or not, we're very open to hiring people without any experience. In fact, I'd rather you have not have any experience. But I'm going to play this call for you, and I'm not going to tell you this is every call, not by a long stretch, but you are subject to hear this kind of person at any given time, any given day. Can you handle that? Are you able to talk professionally to an individual that's emotionally elevated like this person is? And you can weed out a lot of future headaches or a lot of future non-performers at the front door before you ever enroll them.
We do something similar to that. We don't listen. They don't listen to a live call or a recorded call. We ask them, we give them a scenario of a difficult call. So you're dealing with maybe an older person who has a large medical bill, who is terminal in cancer. How would you deal with asking her for money? You know, tell me what you would say to her. We have several of those that we, based on the interview candidate personality, we ask maybe a different question, same kind of scenario based in regards to collections, to see if they have the ability to get through some of those tough calls.
Cool. I'm curious. I think I know the answer to this question, but I want to ask it nonetheless, because there's, as in most things, there's a decent chance that I'm wrong. But I'm curious, how do you or can you objectively measure somebody's soft skills? I mean, is it just looking at the collection rate at the end of the day? Is that how you do it? Or are there other ways that you could objectively monitor or assess or evaluate the soft skills of an individual employee?
Yeah, that's a key part of our QA scorecard, is their soft skills. Are they talking over the consumer? Did they listen to the consumer's reason for non-payment? Or did they already have a response in mind before they actually heard what came out of their mouth? Are they saying good morning or good afternoon, please, thank you? Are they using words that work, what they can do, how they can help somebody? Are they letting them know that they need to place them on hold and asking them if they can place them on hold before doing so, and then thanking them when they get back from the hold for waiting? Those sorts of things. So those are pretty easy to evaluate if they have those or they don't.
Yeah, you can look, obviously, if you have someone with repetitive complaints, that's going to be a flag of someone who's not doing well in that particular area. There is call analytics that might help you if you're plugging in, if you're training people, hey, let's increase the use of some of these power words like we, help, let's, us, all those kind of good, positive, inclusive words. You can have your call analytics look for more of those words, but it depends on how you want to break that data down. It might be a little tough to figure out who's really doing well with it or not, but if you also use live auditors, that might be where you get a little bit better results. If they're very specifically and well-trained on what to listen for and to be more objective than just beyond the use of these words being used, the call analytics software might be able to tell you, hey, we picked up the word we, less, thanks, but doesn't really give you the actual content or the tone so much. So utilizing your live auditors would be a big help in identifying how well in the QA scorecards and whatnot, how well someone's doing.
Same here. We use our call analytics to measure empathy. So it does tell us whether or not, like, an empathy kind of score. But we also look at it in regards to, like, these are the levers that you need in order to be really successful in your job. And number of hangups, like our right party connects, if you can't get people to actually talk to you, then there's something wrong with your communication skills. Some people go with the school of just not a good number or just not a good time. But honestly, if you can build rapport within those first 2 seconds of the call, people are more likely to talk to you. So I think that's a little bit of the soft skills as well. The ability to build rapport and trust within the first 2 seconds of a call.
Excellent. All good ideas. Thank you very much. One last topic I have before we wrap up, and that question is, how do you recognize the importance of the importance of soft skills with someone's personality? Everybody's different. Everyone's got their own personality. So how do you sort of take that personality and it still incorporate, you know, these important things that we've been talking about without really sort of trying to change that personality at all?
For us, we really focus on strengths. So, for example, sometimes some really great collectors are kind of cheerleaders and really outgoing and have the ability to draw the attention of the consumer based on their great personality. And then there's the other side of a person who is maybe very analytical and really great at solving problems. So we really try to figure out, okay, what are your strengths? Where are you good at? Let's feed that. We'll manage around some of your weaknesses. So if you're maybe not a cheerleader on the phone, how can you be better at really solving problems and being the subject matter expert and having and being like assertive versus maybe being a cheerleader? So really focusing on how can we take who you are and your personality and tie it into being successful as a collector? So I think it takes all types, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's really no cookie cutter answer because each personality is different. And I do think that that kind of goes back to that pre-hiring personality profile and seeing what type of personality you're bringing into the office and what their strengths are. And then also looking at maybe what their weaknesses are. So when you do have an issue that comes up, you're able to provide training based on their strengths, and then and understand that was a weakness that was probably identified in that personality profile. You know, for example, in our office, we really look for compliant, accurate, and perfectionist collectors, and that may not be everybody's target employee, but my benchmark agent is highly, highly compliant and not extremely outgoing people oriented. She's definitely people oriented, but not over the top. And she also is cautious and risk adverse. And the play to win or that super assertive personality is there, but not way up high. So I think it's very interesting in our office to look at the fact that what may be a good fit for everybody else is not the best fit for us, and to look at it based on the employees that you currently have, who are your best employees, and then really encouraging each person based on their personality to develop those soft skills. It's I think a lot more difficult when you're dealing with an assertive person. Those are the ones I think that tend and low not a lot of caution. Those are the ones that tend to have more complaints. So figuring out how to promote their compliance and their caution, maybe in toning down some of the assertiveness, is key to your soft skills.
Excellent. Well, we've reached the top of the hour, so I'm going to wrap this up. But before I let everybody go, I really want to thank Courtney, Kelly, and Greg for their insights and their time today. I'm constantly amazed that there are so many people in the ARM industry who are willing to give their time to help educate and inform everybody else, and certainly count these three in that group. Really appreciate their time today, so I hope everybody else appreciates it as well. I also wanted to thank Arbyte Software for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.arbytesoftware.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and listened today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Please be sure to enjoy the rest of your day. I know Greg had to jump off, but Courtney, Kelly, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.